Mark Katz describes his work during the Clinton administration as running the comedy war room. His job focused around the annual series of humorous speeches the president gave to the Washington Press Corps. Katz worked as an adjunct member of the White House speechwriting staff on retainer by the Democratic National Committee. In his new memoir, Clinton and Me, A Real-Life Political Comedy, Katz recounts his experiences getting the president to make his audiences laugh, often by having the president laugh at himself. Well, you know, you talk about how self-deprecating humor can be, you know, very funny, but it doesn't always come naturally to people. It comes natural to you. And you think that's in part because you're Jewish?
Yeah, you know, self-deprecating.
but you say it didn't come naturally to Clinton.
No, he came from a place, Arkansas, where humor is a stick you beat other people up with. And it's kind of the Washington model to use self-deprecating humor. And it's something you need to become accustomed to. You know, being savagely self-effacing is something that's only reflexive to the most practiced and perfect practitioners of power and your average Jew. And so I kind of, you know, had this great opportunity and kind of worked my way into the room. This happened over a long period of time. I started out doing clips on the Dukakis campaign in 1988, and I would look into these meetings on the other side of the door and try to figure out how to get into that room. And over time, I found that humor was the license I had to get into that room. That was my ticket. And when President Clinton was elected, and I was asked to kind of put together some material that he might say at these annual humor dinners he does at the, you know, White House Correspondents' Dinner and the Gridiron Club, that's how I found myself being escorted into the Oval Office, sitting across from him, and pitching him ideas and sharing ideas for jokes, quite honestly. And he jumped right in. He enjoyed it. We spent a lot of time, you know, each speech we would probably spend 45 minutes to an hour trading jokes. I would go in with my pages of stuff, and he had ideas, and there were other kind of high-ranking White House aides all around us, and there are a lot of, you know, talented, smart, funny people in politics, and it was just one of these great, rare, wonderful occasions when, for an hour on a day, it was all about sharing jokes, trading jokes, and getting this guy ready for the big speech he had to give live on C-SPAN that Saturday night.
It sounds like you really enjoyed working with President Clinton, but there was at least one joke you wanted him to do that he was very uncomfortable doing. And this had to do with an egg timer. How did you want him to use the egg timer?
I wanted him to use an egg timer to kind of solve that week's weekly crisis, which was a speech he had given that went on far too long at the State of the Union address in 1995, a speech that went on for an hour and 21 minutes. And that very same week, he had a speech at the Alfalfa Dinner, an annual humor dinner. And my idea for him was to walk to the podium without saying a word, pull an egg timer from his pocket, set it to 5 minutes, and put it on the corner of the podium and let the room have a big laugh along with him and kind of concede the fact that he had given a speech that went on far too long. And he just did not want to concede the point, quite honestly. At that point, you know, you got to remember it was a low point in the administration. It was just a few months after the 1994 midterm elections. And he rejected the idea of the egg timer and wound up, you know, basically rewriting the speech. You know, the speech was kind of predicated in the egg timer. By the way, when the egg timer was going to go off, he was going to add more time each and every time. He rewrote the speech up on the dais, and it didn't work out well. He gave a speech that was meaner than it should have been and tried settling scores, and that's not the best use of humor. But before the evening was out, even as the speech was not going well, and he could tell that, he pulled the egg timer from his pocket and said, "Maybe this'll help," and got the big laugh of the night. And he took away the lesson from that he needed to learn, which is that humor is best used when directed at yourself.
Did you ever misjudge how a joke was going to go over and find that your guy had to pay the consequences for having said this in a speech?
You know, there was one joke in 1998, where the museum, the news museum, came out with its rankings of the biggest news events of the 20th century. And on that list, somewhere around number 63, was Bill Clinton getting impeached. And based on that, we had a joke in one of his speech, basically the president complaining about being only being ranked number 63, you know, especially given all the hoopla. And the punchline was, what does a guy have to do to crack the top 50? Okay, now, to our ears, and this went through the entire West Wing, to our ears, that joke was about, you know, what does a guy have to do other than getting impeached to crack the top 50? The room, however, heard it very differently. The room heard, their mind went to the specific, you know, indiscretions that created the impeachment.
Right.
And they heard the joke as, you know, what specific, you know, activity, personal activities would a man have to do to crack the top 50? And no one in the White House ever anticipated that joke and that laugh. You know, at the snickers, really, quite honestly, that we did not hear because we just were so ensconced in our own bubble of, you know, what impeachment was. That joke was a good example of a joke that kind of got through this very, you know, very difficult and vetting process. And even that joke kind of had a consequence that we never saw coming.
You did some running for Al Gore when he was vice president, or for him a little bit when he was running for president. You talked about the importance of self-deprecating humor. Was it hard to convince Al Gore to make jokes about his image as being really stiff?
You couldn't tell Al Gore a joke that would upset him. He had an amazing ability to see himself from across the room. And know the kind of jokes that Al Gore needed to tell. And I had great experiences working with the vice president because he was fearless. I remember trying to talk him out of a joke once that he wound up giving because I thought it kind of crossed over a line that he liked so much.
What was the joke?
The joke was, it was in the middle of the Gridiron Dinner of 1998, and he had been asked to fill in for the president when the president... No, it wasn't 98. Forgive me. When did the president break his leg? Probably 1997. And he was on the dais, and someone whispered a joke to him. And the joke went something like this. Trent Lott had made kind of a nasty remark about him that week. And someone had whispered a joke to the vice president saying... the joke went like this. Trent Lott, you know, the Democrats have gone very far to up their standards on campaign finance reform. Senator Lott, up yours.
Did he say that?
Someone pitched him that joke, and the next thing I know, a Secret Service guy is tapping me on the shoulder because the vice president wants to go over this joke. And in the room that night was also Al Franken. A friend of the vice president's and a very funny man, obviously. And we huddled in the back room of the Capitol Hilton, and the vice president wanted to know what we thought of that joke. And there were some other White House vice president's speechwriters there, Dan Schnoor and Eric Pink. Dan Pink and Eric Schnoor. And vice president wanted to know what we thought of this joke. And Al Franken said, it's a very funny joke. And Schnoor said, it's very funny, you should use it. Dan Pink, very funny, you should definitely use it. I had actually heard the joke before in various incarnations, and that devalued it greatly to me. I think a person telling a gridiron speech especially should kind of use jokes that aren't, you know, well-known already. But then I became nervous, you know, what if the room gives it an ooh, which is kind of the Washington equivalent of the referee calling it out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ooh. And then I thought, well, even if the room doesn't give it an ooh, what if Trent Lott makes noise about it and, you know, on Monday and Al Gore has to apologize for it on Tuesday? Who needs that? So I, in the process of sorting all this stuff out, I said, I don't think you should do it. I'm sorry. And that's when Al Franken pitched a saver to the joke. He said, well, in case the joke doesn't go well, here's a saver you can use. You could say, hey, come on, the venerable master loved that joke. That was a joke about the a reference, which is very timely at the time, about the Buddhist monks. And I said to the vice president, sir, if that joke needs a saver, you've already lost. He said, well, we'll see. You know, I'll decide what to do once I'm up there. Well, sure enough, Al Gore gets, you know, takes the stage later that evening, tells savagely effacing jokes. And you got to remember, he was in the middle of his own crisis. This was in the middle of controlling legal authority. And, fundraising phone calls he made from his desk at the White House, which, you know, was at odds with federal laws. And so he made savage jokes at his own expense on those very topics. I mean, that night we opened, we did a little bit of stagecraft where the spotlight hit him on the dais. He's on the phone talking. And the room is silent, and the whole room is silent. And then he looks around and he says into the phone, "I'm gonna have to call you back." And then stands up and gives this speech, all predicated in one of the premises of the joke is you got a lot of good jokes off me on this topic, and I'm going through a hard time. Here are some jokes you missed, and he tells the jokes that they missed, all on himself, all about his crisis of the week. And later that night, you know, as before the speech was over, he told the Trent Lott up yours jokes. Got a huge laugh, you know, and dared to go where I begged him not to go. And it paid off. It was, you know, so again,
do you think it's because he had earned so much goodwill by being so funny up to that point?
I think so. I believe it is my thesis that once you've been sufficiently self-deprecating, you have earned the right to be self-deprecating on behalf of others. And by that point in his speech, he had done that.
Mark Katz, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Mark Katz's new memoir is called Clinton and Me. Katz is a speechwriter and humorist whose company is called the Soundbite Institute.